President-elect Obama will, in an hour, add to the cabinet that he wants to assemble in Washington at a news conference that could also focus on his old Senate seat. Fox News Radio's Jennifer Kuiper is live in Chicago.
Dave, former Senator Tom Daschle will be introduced this morning as Health and Human Services Secretary. He'll also run the new White House Office of Health Reform. A Democratic official says Daschle will be the White House's voice on the issue. Questions about the recent scandal involving the Illinois governor's alleged attempt to sell the president-elect's old Senate seat are likely. Dave?
Jennifer, an attack in Iraq. A bomber blowing himself up, killing at least 50 people at a crowded restaurant in the city of Kirkuk. This happened at lunchtime as families gathered for a religious holiday. Defense Secretary Robert Gates is in Afghanistan.
I think we're going to be in this struggle for quite a long time. And I think we have to make sure we've got some of the basics right.
Which includes sending in more troops. Gates says he plans to send in two more brigades by next summer as the Pentagon tries to fill commanders' requests for 20,000 additional troops. Chew on this. Researchers in Scotland say genetics play not just a role in how much we eat, but also what we eat.
Scientists were well aware of a gene linked to obesity, but they didn't know the gene could actually influence eating habits. Researchers who studied nearly 3,000 children found that those with a common variation of the gene were likely to overeat high-calorie foods. In fact, they ate 100 extra calories per meal, which over time can pack on the pounds. Scientists say not everyone with that version of the gene is destined to tip the scales. They say the gene won't make people overweight if they don't overeat. Pam Husso, Fox News Radio.
Santa needs a rabies shot? In New Jersey, a volunteer Santa at a charity event was attacked by a house cat bobcat mix at a photo event for an animal rescue group. The cat's owner has produced vaccination records. I'm Dave Anthony, Fox News Radio.
And WVOX.com, the official stations of New Rock City, the place where you can enjoy a wholesome family entertainment experience.
Radio. It's only a little box with a cord and some knobs that tells us stories and sings us songs and gives us the score and warns of the storm. It's only a little box with a cord and some knobs that makes us wonder and cheer, kiss and cry, and sometimes dance, and sometimes fight. It's only a little box filled with sockets and circuits that sits on the counter, that drives in a car, that flies to the sky, that hangs in the bar and asks who we are and what do we think and who do we love and why do we hate. It's only a little box with a cord and some knobs. To see all of the wondrous things about radio, go to RadioHeardHere.com.
Brought to you by the radio industry and this station to remind you that radio is heard here, radio is heard everywhere.
There's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. Another area of low pressure working its way out of the Gulf Coast will travel up along the stationary front, right up along the eastern seaboard. It's going to keep our temperatures on the cool side, generally in the upper 30s, lower 40s during the daytime today, and it will drop back into the mid-30s tonight, but quite a bit of rainfall is a good possibility for it later today and this evening, in some places better than 2 to 3 inches, and because of that, a flood watch is in effect right through late tonight. Now, all the precipitation may go over to a period of some wet snow, sleet, and rain before ending early morning hours, or actually pre-dawn on Friday. Then we get into partial sunshine and cool conditions. As a matter of fact, fair but cool weather will be with us right through the weekend. So our forecast in detail call for periods of rain and chilly today, temperatures 35 to 40, and a flood watch in effect through late tonight. Periods of rain heavy at times this evening. Overnight, mid-30s could mix with and change over to some snow by daybreak. Daytime on Friday, rain and snow showers in the morning, then partly sunny in the afternoon near 40. Saturday, sunshine mid-30s. Sunday, sunny in the upper 30s. I'm meteorologist Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVOX, WVIP.
Hi, my name is Command Sergeant Major Paul Goldsmith. I'm coming from Camp Castle Career. I'd like to send a season greeting to my Aunt Renee, located in Bronx, New York. Renee, I just want to say season greetings from me and Jennifer. We're doing fine. We love and miss you guys. So I hope everybody's blessed. God, take care. Have a good day, and I'll see you soon.
Season's greetings.
And keep an eye out for that mistletoe. AM 1460 WVOX.
Thank you. Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX presents Environmentally Sound with environmental activist Bob Lebensold. Join Bob and his guests as they talk about protecting our most precious resource, the environment. Now, here's Bob Lebensold.
Good morning. Thank you, John. Good morning. Welcome to Environmentally Sound. I am Bob Lebensold. It's been quite some time. I welcome you all back. I'm your host for this series on the natural world, education, and culture. We bring you guests from diverse disciplines, scientists, activists, authors, educators, entertainers, and public officials. We seek to stimulate your curiosity, intellect, and passion. Today's news from the natural world. Today is Thursday, December 11th, 2008, the 80th day of autumn. We have lost 1 minute of daylight since yesterday, 40 minutes since last we met 4 weeks ago. Sun rose at 7:10 this morning. It will set at 4:27 this evening. We will have 9 hours, 17 minutes of daylight today. In 10 days, on December 21st, the winter solstice and shortest day of the year, days will begin to lengthen again. So that's it. For only 10 more days, we will be losing time, and then we start to gain them again. That's always the good news of the first day of winter, the shortest day of the year, and we have lost minutes of daylight since the day before, but now is when the breaks go on and we turn right back around and we make a U-turn and we go back. They will continue to do so until the first day of summer, which is June 21st this year, and it happens to coincide with Father's Day. The moon will rise 3:14 this afternoon. It will set at 6:05 tomorrow morning. It will reach full phase tomorrow, so it will appear just about full in tonight's sky. Our next high tides, in New Rochelle, 9:37 this evening, in Yonkers, 7:56 this evening, Tarrytown, 8:40, and in Peekskill at 9:19 p.m. Environmentally Sound will not be heard on Christmas Day. That's 2 weeks from today, so we will not meet again for 4 weeks again, and that should be the end of our erratic schedule for a while. Our next broadcast will be January 8th, and I would like to wish all of you a wonderful and healthy holiday season, and may 2009 be your best year yet. Now, our regular feature, names of American service members who have lost their lives in Iraq. May they live on in all of our hearts. The most recent report of American deaths in Iraq is 4,209, 624 more in Afghanistan. The best estimate of wounded in action in both countries is 33,476. Sergeant Anthony Davis, age 43, of the Army, Deerfield, Florida. He was shot by an Iraqi security force soldier on November 25th. I'm sorry, but I've lost some of this stuff. I'm going to try to get it as right as I can. Captain Warren A. Blank, age 26. He was a Marine from Cincinnati, Ohio. Combat injuries on November 25th. First Lieutenant William K. I'm not sure of that name. I'm really uncomfortable with the way these printed out. It's something like Harnigan. I'll try to get them right next time. He was age 35, Army, Doraville, Georgia. This was a non-combat related incident. Private First Class Miguel A. Wilson, age 36, of the Army, Bonham, Texas, died of injuries sustained during a rescue attempt of another soldier in Abu Saif, Iraq, on November 21st. I would hope he would get at least a Bronze Star for those actions. Gunnery Sergeant Marcelo R. Velasco, age 40, from the Marines. He's of Miami, Florida. This was a non-hostile incident in Anbar Province on November 19th. Now, there were two casualties, both chief warrant officers, killed when their helicopter crashed while on a mission over Mosul, Iraq, on November 15th. Chief Warrant Officer Donald V. Stark and Chief Warrant Officer Christian P. Humphreys. The first was 37, second was 28, both Army warrant officers. Donald Stark from Memphis, Tennessee, and Christian Humphreys from Fallon, Nevada. Corporal Aaron M. Allen, age 24, a Marine from Buellton, California, died in Anbar on November 14th. And PFC James M. Clay, age 25, of the National Guard, the Arkansas National Guard, his hometown, Mountain Home, Arkansas. He died in a vehicle accident, in Anbar. And PFC Armando A. La Paz, age 21, of the Army, Riverside, California. His injuries were sustained during a vehicle rollover in Baghdad on November 13th. Specialist De La Paz died on the date of our last broadcast. The other nine were alive on that day. And we note that a captain, first lieutenant, and two chief's warrant officers were among them. So some of the officers, commissioned officers and warrant officers were among those. May these American servicemen live forever in our hearts, and may this feature come to an end in the very near future, because there are no more deaths to report. My apologies for my printout not being exactly legible. I hope I got the names as right as I could, and they deserve absolutely to be honored. Okay, it's time for the Culture Corner, my take on movies, plays, operas, ballet, and what have you. Keep in mind that these are my opinions, and you have the right to disagree, because everyone has the right to be wrong. Well, last week we went to see the Big Apple Circus. Now, the Big Apple Circus is not a very large-scale event, but it's a very good-natured one. The clowns include audience members in the show. Sarah Schwartz's wire is only about 6 feet from the floor, but a very talented wire walker and entertaining to watch. Actually, the more common height is about 25 feet. No wild animals, but there are dogs and horses. Luciano Anastasini's dogs don't seem stressed in any way as they jump through their hoops and otherwise amuse. And all of the dogs are rescues from pounds. Now, that's a nice thing. Trapeze artists are great, as are the jugglers. All the acts were good. And additionally, the Big Apple Circus's community service programs for ill, handicapped, and economically disadvantaged children are wonderful. This is their 31st season. It plays until January 18th. They are at Lincoln Center. I recommend the show. You can call them directly at 800-899-2775, or, of course, Ticketron and all those. Also saw Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater two nights ago. This is Alvin Ailey's 50th anniversary, and they are doing it up. The performance I saw on Tuesday, however, was sketchy. The Golden Section, choreographed by Twyla Tharp, continues her trend of weaker works than the spectacular ones for which she is known. Very talented woman, and afraid she's fading. The music was jarring to me and my colleague, as was the music for the second selection, a piece choreographed by Ailey himself in 1958. The dancers are always great, every minute, every number, but dance is a marriage of movement and music. If the music is weak, then the show disappoints, as did these first two numbers. Fortunately, the third, a rousing piece based on the music of Otis Redding and choreographed by George Faison, who was in attendance and took a bow, was masterful. For the first time all evening, the marriage of music and movement worked beautifully and showed the best of this fine company. The Alvin Ailey Dance Company is a wonderful institution with great community programs. I hope Ms. Tharp understands that until she is re-inspired, should that day ever come, she should leave the choreography to others who still have it. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on AM 1460 WVOX in New Rochelle, New York. If you're listening on Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket, Marathon Key or Key Largo, Isla Verde or Isla Mujeres, Mexico, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, you have logged on to www.wvox.com and you are listening live. And before I get to my first guest, I'd just like to tell you about a book. It's called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You. It's authored by Louise Lane. And let me just tell you, this should be of interest to anyone who has suffered at the hands of a doctor or hospital or other medical facility. Again, the book is called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You. It's written by Louise Lane. It documents 48 cases of medical malpractice and mishaps. Now, we've all heard of the extraordinary cases where the wrong organ was removed or incorrect medication was given. But this book tells you of more common issues, diagnostic tests you should avoid, whether invasive or not, ways in which hospitals and doctors can put you at risk, can compromise your general health, your eyesight, and even your life. Now, my own experience, I had had regular eye exams. I was uncomfortable with the way those sensitive organs were handled, pushed around. I saw no reason to accept that my eyes were being treated so harshly to cause me discomfort, but like many of you, I figured doctors know what they're doing, so I allowed it. After I read Louise Lane's book, though, I stopped going for those routine tests, and should I have eye exams in the future, I will be much more assertive about telling the doctor how not to treat my eyes. There's much else in the book. That is just one example. It's called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You by Louise Lane, available through Amazon.com and other online booksellers. Okay, my first guest is Alex Matheson, the Hudson River Keeper. The Riverkeeper organization is alive and well in many places, not just stateside, but internationally as well. If I'm not mistaken, we'll have Alex clear that up for us. Many programs to protect our own Hudson River. Long Island Sound also has a sound keeper, and many others. One of their newer advocacies is to encourage people to bottle their own water and not use environmentally unsound bottled water. To this end, they have put their name on some very elegant, these are stainless steel, actually. Very light, surprisingly. I thought it was aluminum, but it's food grade, what they call food grade stainless steel, one of which I have before me right here. Alex has joined us twice before, last time in person at our studio, today from somewhere else. We're about to find out where. Welcome, Alex Matheson.
Bob, it's nice to be with you.
Good. Now, where are you today?
I'm actually working from home today in New York City.
Oh, cool. Okay, now... you want to say anything about this bottle? Is that a project you get into? Oh, yeah, no,
we're very proud of it. We have these new stainless steel reusable water bottles, and the idea is to use them to promote New York City tap water in general. Our tap water supply in New York is consumed by 10 million New Yorkers, or half the state's population, roughly 8 or 9 million people in the New York City area, and then about a million in Westchester and other communities up and down the Hudson. This water supply is one of the cleanest and best tasting in the world. It's one of the safest in the world as well, and it's an unfiltered surface water system, which is why it's so particularly tasty and clean. And unfortunately, the bottled water industry, which has become a multi-billion-dollar industry making incredible profits, it's one of the most lucrative industries in the world, simply by selling a resource that belongs to all of us from the get-go. And they are selling this water to us at up to 10,000 times the cost of our municipal drinking water supply, and that's just ridiculous. The average New Yorker spends about $1,400 each year on water that he could get for about 85 cents if he just simply use tap water.
And this is a very attractive bottle, as long as the water is safe. It's got a what do you call those, carbonier clamp?
Yeah, it's basically, it's like a SIG bottle. That's the way it's shaped. It's stainless steel, which is widely known as the safest and least interfering container or material for a water bottle.
And it looks like it holds about a pint.
Yes. Well, yeah, a little bit more than that, maybe about 20 ounces.
Uh-huh.
So it fits in your purse or your briefcase quite easily. And what we're basically saying is New Yorkers should drink tap water wherever and whenever they can, whether it's at home, whether it's on the go. You get one of our water bottles or another water bottle and take it with you, or at work, et cetera. And also, when you're in restaurants, you should make sure to ask for tap water. And even if you've got a good relationship with your local favorite restaurants, ask the owners to discontinue selling bottled water. There's many restaurants in New York City now that are starting to do that, and they're not selling bottled water, and they're selling instead either tap water that goes through a very basic filtration system, usually set up in the restaurant, and also carbonated water, because they have kind of, you know...
They have those machines.
Yeah, they have those machines in the restaurant.
Now, let me just tell people, you can get this at www.riverkeeper.org.
Yep.
Very simple.
They're selling like hotcakes, and they're very handsome-looking, and they've got a
very
clever little slogan that says, I bottle my own, which I think the meaning is pretty obvious, but the idea is we don't need bottled water. We've got our own delicious and safe drinking water right here in New York.
Very cool. Now, you mentioned before that something about our water being unfiltered. Now, I remember in the last few years there was some, I don't know, they wanted to start dumping treated wastewater into reservoirs. Could that possibly be? And then they would have to have installed multi-billion dollar filtration plants. What was that all about?
Well,
and
what is this? You know, there are upstate sewage treatment plants that are treated plants and treated effluent. And it does, you know, water is water, and it moves around and connects and reconnects with other bodies of water. So, all water eventually kind of goes through the cycle.
Okay, but does,
back through the cycle. So,
but is treated sense, does treated water actually get dumped into drinking water supplies?
It can, but A, it's treated, and B, by the time it makes it down to where it comes out of your tap, it is basically naturally filtered and diluted, but also the one thing that the city does do, it doesn't filter the water, but it does add a small amount of chlorine just to make sure that any pathogens that could be remaining are killed. But again, I just want to make it clear that the municipal supplies of drinking water in the United States are heavily, heavily regulated. Like, for instance, in New York City, drinking water is tested hundreds and hundreds of thousands of times each year, as opposed to only about once a week in the case of the bottled water industry. So this is a very heavily scrutinized and regulated source of water. And again, New York Water comes out with high marks and meets all the federal standards.
Okay, Alex, let me just get to something political, if I may. You've worked closely with Bobby Kennedy, have you not?
I have, yes. He is our chief prosecuting attorney at Riverkeeper and also a member of our board.
Okay, now, I've seen it floated and heard it floated that Obama is considering him for the EPA. I cannot think of a better appointment. Do you have any other information other than the rumor?
Well, I'll tell you this. The New York Times in today's paper, funny enough, given the
I didn't
conversation
see it
we're having, has already indicated what Obama's environmental team is going to look like. And it looks like for the head of the EPA, he's going to tap Lisa Jackson, who is the current New Jersey DEP commissioner, basically the top environmental official in New Jersey.
Do we like her?
You know, I haven't worked with her directly, but I've heard good things, and she's, I think, widely respected as very expert. She's an engineer by training, which I think a lot of environmentalists think is a good thing, because typically a lot of these heads can be lawyers, and that's not always the most effective fit. But anyway, so I think I don't know really enough from personal experience, but I hear good things.
Are you disappointed at all that Bobby didn't get it, or do you think Obama is good and making good choices, and he's we've got to go with him?
There's no more effective and more passionate advocate for the environment than Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
Right.
He really is an American treasure in that way.
I believe that.
He really does know the issues backwards and forwards. He's incredibly smart. And he is incredibly articulate and eloquent in talking about the issues and also making them understood by the American public at large and also making them a non-political issue. He makes the point over and over again that the environment is not the province of either Democrats or Republicans, but all of us. We all want to see stronger environmental laws. So he's terrific, and he would make certainly a very effective EPA administrator. But, I think on the whole, President-elect Obama has done an exceedingly good job in picking his new cabinet leader.
Good. Now you've also worked with John Cronin, Pete Seeger, and the people from Beacon and the sloop. What's the name of their sloop?
Clearwater Sloop.
The Clearwater Sloop. Yep. You've worked with them too. Any experiences about that you'd like to share?
Oh well, I haven't actually worked with John Cronin that much. He's, just for your listeners who don't know, he is my predecessor. He was the Hudson River keeper. He wasn't technically the first riverkeeper. A guy named Tom Wyatt was, but John effectively was, because Tom only lasted, I think, less than a year. And John really was the first riverkeeper on the Hudson from about 1983 to 2000, and I succeeded him. So we really didn't overlap much, and I've gone to him and talked to him about various issues from time to time, but really didn't have a chance to work with him.
And he wrote
since I came on in 2000. But again, he's mostly retired, and he does projects here and there. But he's a legend, and he's a real hero when it comes to activism in general and environmental protection in particular, especially at that on the Hudson.
Well, when I spoke to him a couple of years ago, I asked Pete if there anything I could do for him. He says, yes, tell me where I left my youth. And then this last year when I spoke to him, he said, tell me where I left my hearing. And he's got other problems, but he's well into his 80s. He still sings. He's... like you say, he's a legend.
Well, I think it's fitting that Pete will be turning 90 next year,
90.
2009.
Oh, good for him.
In the same year that we're going to be celebrating the 400th anniversary of Henry Hudson's quote-unquote discovery of the of the Hudson River. But it is going to be a great opportunity to celebrate the Hudson and celebrate the good things that we've done to help restore it. And Pete was really at the vanguard of that movement back in the 60s, and we owe a huge debt of gratitude to him.
And he took a lot of weight. He was accused of all kinds of things, being a communist among them, and he steadfastly said, "Nope, I'm an American. I'm not a communist. But you know, they got some good ideas, and I have no problem listening to them," which is perfectly open-minded. How much time do we have? We still have 2 minutes. Recently, there was an article in the Journal News, actually. It was on Friday, May 16th, not so recently anymore, in which you were interviewed and quoted, and you spoke about fish species that have increased and species that have decreased. And what is the state of them now? The ones that had declined were shad, which is a very signature species for the Hudson River, alewife, catfish, perch, smelt, and blueback herring. Only striped bass, bluefish, and spot-tail shiner increased. Is there an update on that?
Not particularly, except for, I mean, in terms of the, you know, how those species are doing. Obviously, that report that we issued basically said that 10 of the 13 signature species in the Hudson River, including the ones that you named, were in various states of decline, and that was quite an alarming result for us. We certainly knew that there was a few species that were struggling, but we didn't realize that the trend was that widespread, and we're needless to say dismayed, because the Hudson has really made a major comeback over the last couple of decades, and we would have expected a corollary improvement in fish populations, but that's not the case. And I think the bottom line is because there's a lot of insults being imposed on these fish, from power plants to a warming river to invasive species and offshore fishing and so on. The good news is that the DEC took our report seriously and is hard at work to protect, in particular, the shad and the herring.
Good. Okay, Alex,
efforts underway.
Can I ask you to stay on after the break and we have another few minutes together?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, very good. You are listening to WVOX AM 1460 in New Rochelle, New York. I am Bob Levensoll, your host for Environmentally Sound. My guest is Alex Matheson, the Hudson River Keeper, and we will be right back.
Live, this is the flagship station of Whitney Media, 1460 WVOX and worldwide at WVOX.com. Now, the latest update from Fox News Radio.
Fox News Radio, I'm Jane Metzler. End of the road for the auto bailout bill. The $14 billion package apparently going nowhere.
It looks like the auto bill that passed the House yesterday may soon die in the Senate. Fox News producer Trish Turner's informal survey this morning shows plenty of Republican opposition remaining, to the point where Democratic leaders do not have the 60 votes they need to avoid a filibuster.
Fox Radio's Rich Johnson in Washington. If the car companies fail, that could add to an already bleak unemployment picture.
Initial claims for unemployment jumped to a 26-year high this week.
Fox's Brenda Butner, 573,000 new unemployment filings. Today, Connecticut-based toolmaker Stanley announcing 2,000 layoffs. That's about 10% of the workforce. On Wall Street, an hour after the opening bell, the Dow is down about 7 points. And a news conference on health care 30 minutes from now for President-elect Obama. Fox News, we report, you decide.
You wanted it, and now you have it. Music plus movies in White Plains is now the best source for music, movies, DVDs, and much more. For over 25 years, Music plus Movies has specialized in Westchester's largest selection of entertainment, all under one roof. Music plus Movies stocks all your favorite music from rock to metal, and all with the best prices, too. And of course, check out their huge inventory of DVDs and movies. Music plus Movies carries one of Westchester's largest selections of adult video novelties. So if you want to spice up your life, visit Music plus Movies and check out their adult selections. Music plus Movies, 80 Mamaroneck Avenue in the heart of White Plains. Call them 428-0600, 428-0600. Music plus Movies, 80 Mamaroneck Avenue, White Plains, 428-0600. For the very best in music, movies, DVDs, and adult videos and novelties, it's gotta be Music plus Movies.
Here's the updated weather forecast for Westchester County and vicinity. Periods of rain likely today. Flood watch in effect right through tonight. It's going to be chilly, too. Temperatures generally in the upper 30s, lower 40s. Some of the rain later this afternoon, this evening. Could be heavy at times. Looks like periods of rain tonight. Nighttime lows in the mid-30s could change to some mixture of rain, sleet, and snow by daybreak before ending. And overnight lows mid-30s. Tomorrow, some rain and snow showers in the morning. Partly sunny afternoon or highs near 40. Saturday's weather, sunshine, mid-30s. Sunday, sunny in the upper 30s. I'm Steve Pelletieri for Whitney Media, WVUX, WVIP.
From the historic city of New Rochelle, home of Bruce the Swimmer, Sydney Frank and Porte, Kathy and Rich Pisano, and the Sound Shore Medical Center of Westchester, the great and growing hospital for you and yours.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
With AM 1460, WVOX.
WVOX.
We are back. You are listening to Environmentally Sound on WVOX AM 1460 here in New Rochelle. If you are listening in Tierra del Fuego, Argentina, Valparaiso, Chile, Rio de Janeiro, or Manaus, Brazil, or Ulaanbaatar, Siberia, you have logged on to www.wvox.com, and you are listening live. Of course, if you're listening in Southern Connecticut, Northern Bronx, North Shore of Long Island, up through, all the way through, what's the first county? Nassau County. And in southern Westchester, you are listening on our airwaves. Okay, before we get back to Alex Matheson, I'd just like to tell you about my sponsors, the Learning Shop in Harrison, New York. They're a full-service tutoring company. They provide homebound services for upwards of 20 Westchester County school districts, including Bronxville, Rye, Edgemont, Chappaqua, and New Rochelle. They also provide private tutoring in all academic areas for any number of standardized tests, including GEDs and SATs. Their telephone number in 914 is 835-1070. They've been running an after-school resource room program for over 7 years. They have had numerous successes with college-bound students as well as remedial instructions. This is the Learning Shop of Harrison, New York. My friends, I vouch for them personally. There's always coffee and tea, bagels and cream cheese, cookies, whatever it may be. For all visitors, they are hospitable, they are intelligent, they are professional. 914-835-1070. And let me just tell you one more time about Louise Lane's book. It's called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You. Now, we don't want to be too alarmist. Of course, most doctors do take care of business properly, but there are dangers. And in this book, which should be of interest to anyone who has ever suffered, some people really have. Again, the book is called Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You, written by Louise Lane. Any of the online booksellers have it. It documents 48 cases of medical malpractice and mishaps. Again, the extraordinary cases where wrong organs are removed, that makes headlines, or incorrect medication. It makes big headlines. But there are much more common issues. Certain diagnostic tests, whether they're invasive or not, can be harmful, can put you at risk, can compromise your general health, your eyesight, and even your life. As I said, my eyes were pushed around. There's nothing wrong. I did not suffer any permanent injury, but I felt that eyes should be treated much more gently than that. And after reading Louise's book, I actually got more assertive with doctors, and now I tell them, no, don't do that. And that's what this book might do for you, too. And that's just one example, of course. The book, again, Appointment with Danger, Medical Care Can Kill You by Louise Lane. You can get it at Amazon.com, and I'm sure Barnes & Noble and any other online booksellers, or if you want to call the station, we'll arrange for it. That's okay. Now, let's get back to Alex Matheson. Are you still with us, Alex?
I am.
Good. Okay. Now, we were just talking about those species in the Hudson River. And there's another article. This is from actually November 12th, where you're also, you were mentioned. Certainly, it's about testing the sewage on the Hudson. There's a picture of John Lipscomb, the river. I don't know.
Captain, yeah.
Yeah, he's one of your captains. He's taking samples. What is the state of the Hudson River today?
Well, the Hudson is still a terrific success story and is hailed as an international model for ecosystem restoration, which is why, as you mentioned earlier, the Hudson River Keeper inspired and spawned a whole movement of water keepers around the world. We now have about 185 water keepers on 6 continents, and they all are modeled after the basic Hudson River approach, which is where community citizens come together and defend their local waterway. and recognize the right and responsibility they have to do so. So that's you know, that's the good news. The bad news is that as we've been reading really in the nation's papers, America's infrastructure is in a state of disrepair and is badly in need of upgrades and improvements. And the federal funding for that infrastructure support, which is what states and localities traditionally have relied on, because we're talking big dollars that a local town or county or even state cannot afford on their own, and that funding has dropped off the map, essentially. The federal government used to, for instance, contribute 78% of what was needed to upgrade and maintain our water and wastewater treatment infrastructure in a given state like New York, and that has fallen to 3%. So essentially, it's almost zeroed out. And as a result, many of our sewage treatment plants are failing increasingly, and that's unfortunately the Hudson's no exception.
That's a problem.
And what our study showed essentially is that we're seeing some real hot spots up and down the river.
Now, there's another problem. This is just our last question because we have another guest holding. Constant new construction that's on the riverfront. Now, riverfront is prime breeding ground, estuaries, for instance, for all kinds of species of water animals, mostly fish, but certainly other water animals as well. Is all this development, and I'll ask you to answer this fairly quickly, is all of this development harmful, or is it fitting somehow environmentally?
Yes, it is. Potentially very harmful, and we're seeing a real rash of development up and down the Hudson. 18,000 new units proposed for the Hudson from Tarrytown up to Albany, and that is going to definitely have an impact on both water quality and critical habitat for aquatic species.
And you are active in that area?
We are.
Great. Thank you so much, Alex Matheson, Hudson Riverkeeper. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Okay, bye now. My next guest is Melissa G. Thrallkill. She's a staff attorney for the Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco. This organization is most focused on endangered species, and their actions are widespread to include direct habitat impact and indirect impact, such as global warming, which impacts us all. Speaking to us from San Francisco, where it is 7:40 in the morning, welcome Melissa Thrallkill.
Hello, Bob.
Good morning. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Are you awake yet?
I haven't had my coffee yet, but
no.
I rode my bike to work, so I've got the blood pumping.
Okay. Now that's environmentally sound, and I admire that. and of course, coffee is not as good as a bike ride. How is the weather in San Francisco today?
It's pretty nice. We've been having a wonderful fall, and the winter hasn't been too bad yet. Could use some precipitation at some point, but we've been lucky.
But
it's always nice here in San Francisco.
Yeah, and winter hasn't yet begun, just to keep the record straight.
Yeah, well, true.
10 more days, but we did have a real cold day, and we have kind of rain here in New Rochelle today, which is my favorite weather personally. I have to ask you, this is just pure curiosity. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but Melissa G., what does the G stand for?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Your name is Melissa G. Thrallkill.
That's right.
What does the G stand for?
Oh, it stands for Gale.
Gale, okay. Just
very country sounding. I'm from the South, so.
From the Deep South?
Not the Deep South. From Texas.
Oh, well,
that could be considered worse even, maybe.
These days, yes.
yeah.
Melissa, your specialty, you're an attorney, and your specialty is presumably bringing lawsuits and researching and writing briefs. That's the activist. Your specialty is shale oil. So tell us, what is shale oil, what your issues are with it, what you are doing to minimize its negative impact.
Well, shale oil is basically oil trapped inside of a rock, and you essentially have to heat the rock hundreds of degrees, thousands of degrees maybe, to get the oil out of the rock. And then you have to go through several more processes to refine it into usable fuel. So they consider it an unconventional fuel because it's just developing it is a lot different than your conventional crude oil. Our issues with it is just a very energy-intensive and water-intensive form of energy production. we're not even really sure that it's technologically feasible to do this without having serious impacts on the environment, but we do know it, you know, it will potentially have very serious impacts to the environment. And to reduce those impacts, right now we're just, you know, engaging in the administrative process as far as commenting on environmental studies that come out. And at this point now that the final regulations and the final environmental impact statement and record of decision have come out, we're now looking into possible litigation strategies.
Annette, you said something to me on the phone that it's only profitable at all for oil companies if the price of oil is high because it costs so much to extract. So actually it costs more to extract than they can sell it for when oil and gasoline is where it has now sunk to around $2 a gallon at the pump. Does that mean that if oil stays at this price, the issue becomes moot?
Yeah, if oil prices are high, then this is a attractive option to industry. But we all know that the oil market is pretty volatile, and it could go up and down, you know, at any moment. You know, right now, if it's profitable, they'll go in and start maybe, you know, exploring and developing. But then what happens when it all of a sudden becomes unprofitable? And this is something Colorado saw in the 80s with this exact same issue.
And that was when Black Sunday occurred, right?
Yeah.
What was that?
They refer to it as Black Sunday. And essentially what happened was oil prices were high at the time that they went in. And this refers specifically to an Exxon mobile exploration. And so oil prices were high, and then they suddenly dropped. And then on a Sunday morning in 1982, Exxon basically just took off from this town in Colorado. And it really impacted the economy in a major way. You know, there were over 2,000 layoffs. People just started moving out. Lots of infrastructure that was built was essentially worthless. You know, so that's still a possibility if we pursue this now,
well,
too.
Is there a lot of oil trapped in shale? If it were feasible to get it out and economically, and I'm sorry, environmentally sound to get it out, is there a lot of it?
Yeah, they say, you know, there's more, that we have more oil in this an oil shale in America than oil in Saudi Arabia.
That's just easy to get out.
Is very difficult, and the technology hasn't even really proven that we can even get to all this oil. But the potential of getting a lot of oil from the oil shale is there.
So, do you think it's going to happen now that oil prices are down, or do you think it's a dead issue? I mean, that is your specialty, correct?
My specialty as what?
With
economics and
well, with the Center for Biological Diversity, isn't that what you're focusing on yourself?
Yeah. I've been pretty involved with the oil shale development. They have some research and development projects going on in the area, and this is going to take place in the Rocky Mountain West and Colorado, Wyoming, and Utah. Right now, they have about six RD&D projects, they call them, that are sort, you know, investigating their technologies and so forth. As far as, you know, the commercial industry getting up and running, you know, that's probably at least a decade away before we even see commercial production if the government was to start issuing leases, you know, very soon.
Now, Melissa,
but the regulations were just finalized in November.
I have to tell you, Melissa, you are totally acclimated to California because you speak much more like a Valley girl than a Texan.
I do.
You do. which is refreshing.
Well, that's good.
Now,
I've been told that I don't even have an accent, so.
Well, everybody in California speaks a certain way. It's not hard to know who it is, but it's cute.
Well,
it's
I'll
nice.
Take that as a compliment.
Take it as a compliment, please.
okay.
you are, being an attorney, you're interested in legal things, especially now. Barack Obama has nominated Eric Holder as his new attorney general. Certainly, the Department of Justice over the last 8 years has been highly run in a highly dubious way, bad appointments. Gonzalez was a disaster, and Ashcroft before him actually looks good in comparison to Gonzalez, but he was kind of a bad choice, too. What about Eric Holder? What about the Department of Justice under Barack Obama?
Well, you know, I'm somewhat hesitant to speak directly to Eric Holder and the attorneys in the Department of Justice, because these are the guys that we're usually negotiating with or, you know, facing in court. You know, I think based on the last 8 years, this is probably a more, you know, promising department and choice. And, you know, we really just hope that, that the Obama Department of Justice is committed to enforcing the laws, especially our environmental laws and our civil rights laws. And that's something that wasn't happening over the past 8 years.
I think that most Americans just want it to happen the way it's supposed to happen. It's not even let Obama presidency be brilliant. It's just let it be even-handed, fair, reflect America well, and just do the job. You know, I mean, it would be nice if he turns out to be a wonderful, brilliant leader, but even if he isn't, if he just does the job, it'll be a tremendous improvement, won't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, part of the problems that we saw in this Department of Justice were partisan hirings and firings.
Oh, absolutely.
And, you know, this should be one of the most nonpartisan agencies in the government. So, you know, to the extent that the Department of Justice stays neutral and does their job in enforcing the laws to protect the American public, then, you know, that's what we're hoping for.
Well, suffice it to say that you have a better chance of being appointed to an Obama Justice Department than you did to a Bush Justice Department, right?
Me, myself. definitely. If I was asked any political questions while being interviewed for a Bush Department of Justice job,
you wouldn't have made it.
It would have been a very promising prospect for me.
We are speaking with Melissa G. Thrall-Kill, staff attorney, Center for Biological Diversity. She's in San Francisco, where it is just about 10 to 8 a.m. We appreciate your getting all the way to work at this hour. Don't know what time you woke up, probably 4:30 or so.
No, not quite.
the Center for Biological Diversity is most focused on endangered species and our actions which impact them and our attempts to protect them. Can you mention some of the species that your organization works with and what progress you might be making with them?
Well, we actually work with a lot of species and plants. That includes plants, snails. We have an attorney working on a giant worm. So we're for all species. You know, some of the ones that have been in the news recently, of course, is the polar bear and other sea ice-dependent species. And that's been part of our, you know, efforts to protect species that are impacted by global warming. We've also been working with ocean species, coral, and so forth, that are also impacted by global warming. But it's hard to narrow it down to any sort of handful of species, because we consider them all very important.
Oh, absolutely.
And, we fight for all of them.
Absolutely. It's just there. Well, someone in the studio who doesn't like worms says that you shouldn't be protecting them. But
well, you know, they serve a purpose.
But I disagree. Who's going to eat us when we die? We'll just be a lot of dead people laying around. Are there any species that people can wrap their arms around? I do think that a worm is as important as a human being and that a rat is as good as a polar bear, but most people don't share that pure love of nature. Are there any species like mountain goats or deer or grizzlies or any of the American species or bison that we like to think of as our trademark species, eagles or any of those?
We've been involved in efforts with pretty much all those kinds of species. The California condor
is
a big one that we've been fighting for. A recent one here that's California specific as well is a little animal called the American pika, which is really being impacted by global warming.
What is that? A bird or a fish?
Essentially,
what is the pika? Is that a mammal?
It's kind of part of the rabbit family.
Yeah, it's
really cute. I suggest Googling it and looking at it. It's a really cute little animal, and its habitat is warming. It's mountainous, and it can only migrate up so far. So as the temperatures rise, literally the American pika's blood boils, and they can't escape the heat.
So you say that he's rabbit-like. Does that make him a lagomorph or a rodent?
That's a good question. I couldn't tell you exactly what exactly it would make him.
We're going to have to look him up, Melissa.
I'm looking at him right now on my computer, and it's a really cute little animal. And then there's also some seals that are, really cute if anybody needs an animal that they can hug in order
seals,
to protect.
Yes, absolutely.
I would suggest people going on our website and looking at some of our species that we have up there, and we also have a link to where you can download free ringtones.
Okay, what is the website, Melissa?
It's biologicaldiversity.org.
Biologicaldiversity.org.
Yes.
Okay.
And as I was saying, you can download free ringtones and listen to all the little sounds that the species that we're helping to protect make. And
excellent.
I really love them. I love to download the ringtones.
Have you? I'm going to check it out. Have you also seen condors yourself?
No, I have never seen a condor myself. I'm not a big birder, not yet anyway, but we have a lot of birders here that are really interested in protecting these birds.
Now, I will say...
I haven't seen a lot of them.
I will say that eagles... You haven't seen a lot of them. Well, I will say that eagles have made a comeback because I have seen a number of them here in the New York area. They come over the Hudson, they fish, and they're quite elegant, and whether you see them fly or perch in a tree, and they look at you, and it's like, wow, this is like Uncle Sam is looking me right in the eye. It's kind of special.
Yes,
what do you know about we have about 4 minutes left. What do you know about Obama's plans to develop alternate sources of energy that would obviate the need for this shale oil stuff?
It sounds like he's more committed to it than the Bush administration or any other past administrations have been committed to it. So that's promising. He announced, I think it was last weekend, his desire to sort of implement a New Deal-like program that would create a lot of green jobs and jobs that would help, build America's infrastructure in a way that we can consume less energy. It looks promising, and we need to do it now. That's the thing, the problem with shale oil. It's absolutely the wrong direction. Directly, just to get the oil out, takes lots of energy. So that's greenhouse gas emissions. And then once we start using that energy, it's greenhouse gas emissions. If we're going to stop the impacts from global warming and start reversing the impacts that we've already seeing, we have to stop business as usual. And shale oil is really bad, business as usual.
Shale oil is really bad. Okay, Melissa, well, thank you very much for sharing your insights and your knowledge and for getting up so early in the morning. I hope you'll have a very long, productive day today. It's certainly starting out long, isn't it?
it's starting early, but that's good. I don't mind. I appreciate you talking to me.
Great. My pleasure. Okay, Melissa Thrallkill, Staff Attorney, Center for Biological Diversity in San Francisco. Thank you so much. I'd like to thank Alex Matheson and Melissa Thrallkill for joining us this morning. Not everyone is a believer. Some still truly believe or wish to believe that our environment is not at risk. That government or God will take care of it. Someone else in any case. I don't need to pay attention. Well, no, you really don't. But Alex and Melissa are looking out for you, whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not. They and others like them are working hard all day, week in, week out, to protect a natural legacy for your sons and daughters and grandsons and granddaughters. Your attention is desirable, but no one can pull it out of you. We are fortunate to have such people who carry that load for all of us and don't let the polluters and the miners and the oil companies and timber companies rip our earth asunder for their own gain. Our thought for the week, all truths are easy to understand once they are discovered. The point is to discover them. Stay tuned to WVOX, your quintessential community radio station. Is Howard going to be here? Okay, so Howard Sturman will not be with us. Sometimes we have Alan Shartok, one of his wonderful shows. That's about all we have right now. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate you always. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. We have to use some time, so. Thank you very much for listening. Remember to be kind, for everyone you meet is fighting a great battle. You are here, and it is now. Health and happiness to you all.
Radio. I'm Dave.